All right, so from MMA to NBA, we are joined by a national NBA writer for the Los Angeles Times, a dad rock aficionado, good friend of the program. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, what's going on? How are you?
Jim, I feel like MMA is appropriate for me right now because it felt like I got roundhouse kicked in the face the second I walked outside my hotel here in Boston today.
Love it. I hear you.
I heard you got punched pretty good in Kansas City, too.
Same deal, man. Much worse. And believe me, whatever you're dealing with right now, you're dealing with better than I dealt with yesterday. Trust that.
I would tell people it is, can I wear sweatpants underneath my suit pants cold?
Can I tell you something? Had I done that, I should have done that. Next time I will do that because I wore nothing under my suit pants and it did not go well.
Boy.
Next time I will rock sweatpants under my suit pants and I won't care and I won't be too proud either. You know, right? Nobody cares how you look. It's how you feel. And you feel like crap right now, don't you?
Yeah, it's a little jarring. I'll say this. Plus, you can't buy, and you know this, like you can't buy winter coats in California.
No, you can't find them. They're not for sale. And this is where everybody listening, Dan, says, oh, listen to those two punks, the two SoCal guys.
Yeah.
I don't care, man. I don't care. We were cold. You are cold. I was cold. I'm still cold, and I'm back home. So whatever.
I'm going to be cold, I think, in the mid-March.
There you go. Like. Me too. All right, so you are in Boston for Lakers-Celtics tonight. Mm-hmm. Before we get into that, the Lakers are coming off a win in Houston where they held the Rockets to 17 in the third quarter. They beat the Rockets by 9 in a game where they did not have Anthony Davis. What do you make of their performance overall?
Well, I think they're able to do something. And look, everybody has tried different stuff against James Harden and to varying levels of success. And, you know, he's kind of rewritten what success looks like. Like, he can score 40 and you can still have a successful night against him just by making it really difficult. And I think what the Lakers did that I thought was really interesting, and keep in mind this was without Anthony Davis, is they used JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard to double-team James Harden. Because they have so much size and so much mobility, like if JaVale McGee picks up two cheap fouls, it's like they've got Dwight Howard right there. You know, eventually they'll have Anthony Davis right there too. They're just so much bigger than everybody else. And I think Frank Vogel has done a really good job of deploying that size in different ways and seeing it against Houston, even using, you know, Kyle Kuzma and Russell Westbrook. I think that they did some really interesting stuff defensively, especially in that second half. And they're rolling right now. They're attacking the regular season with sort of a vigor that no one else in the NBA really is. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I haven't made up my mind yet, but, you know, they play hard as hell every time they step on the court. That's for sure.
Dan Wojcicki joining us. So what about that matchup? Like Vogel, he obviously learned some things last night, and the coaching staff came out of it with a sense of knowing what they maybe can do or maybe can't do against Harden. But did they learn enough to know what they could do in a 7-game series against Harden, or is that still a work in progress?
I think it's still a work in progress, but I don't really get the sense, Jim, that teams are all that afraid of trying to figure out what to do against James Harden in a 7-game series. I think he's a lot easier to prepare for when you've got, you know, extended amount of time to kind of deal with it. And sort of, you know, his postseason record shows that. I think it's on him and the Houston Rockets at this point to kind of reverse that trend. This is a guy who, you know, shoots. His efficiency goes way down in the postseason. He gets the line less. He relies on the three-pointer more. And that's volatile. And I think when teams have days on days to scheme, sometimes 2 days off in between games, you know, you forget, like most nights that James Harden steps on the court, he's playing a team that maybe has a practice, maybe has a walkthrough, you know, maybe even sometimes just film work. It's like teams don't actually get on the court and spend a lot of time scheming. The Lakers were able to do that before this game, so they were able to get 1 day of prep in. But you know, I think when you have multiple days to kind of go at him, I think the job gets a little easier. And I mean, there's a reason I think, you know, for me at least, why I thought maybe Houston could have the best record in the West, but I never really considered them as a serious contender to win the West in the playoffs, just because I just think in the playoffs it's a different animal, and the way they play, it just seems a little easier to stop.
He is the national NBA writer for the Los Angeles Times. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, I never thought about Frank Vogel, for instance. When you take a step back, when he was hired, there was so much talk about how this guy's just not going to make it. He's not going to last. And it's only a matter of time before Jason Kidd is named head coach. As it stands, the Lakers have the best record in the West, and Vogel is a serious contender for coach of the year. What do you make of the job he's done with his team?
I mean, it's very Pete Carroll-esque, right? I mean, he's the third choice. You know, it wasn't even just that Jason Kidd would eventually be the guy. It's that, you know, it was going to be Monty Williams, and it was going to be, you know, Ty Lue. Like, Ty Lue was, like, up to the finish line for this job, and You know, obviously, I think he's done an incredible job. But the word that I keep hearing from people when I talk to him is detail. And it's the way that he's able to express what seemingly might seem like complex things and stuff like that. And he's able to kind of make it seem like it's not so difficult. And guys are on a nightly basis are able to kind of execute his schemes because they think they're not that hard. Even though they might be a little complicated, they might be a little more sophisticated than they sound like. There's a simplicity to it, at least in the way he presents the information to his players. And I think, you know, he's done a really good job. And I'll say this too, credit to Rob Pelinka. I think the way that they kind of operated after Kawhi Leonard chose the Clippers, they moved briskly into another plan and they kind of swooped up the best of what was left. And then I think the most, you know, obviously the most underrated decision, not underrated, but maybe the biggest impact decision was, you know, they worked out other centers other than Dwight Howard. And I think a lot of people, myself included, thought a guy like Joakim Noah might even be a better fit. But, you know, talking to people, they said, no, look, we like Dwight, and part of the reason we like Dwight is that we know there are going to be nights when AD doesn't play. We know there are going to be nights when we need a little extra punch, and we think Dwight can give it to us. And they've been spot on with that decision. He's been a real difference maker.
Yeah, but Dan, what about that? Like, how did they know? Why did they know? Did the light just go off for Dwight Howard? What do you make of his resurrection?
I mean, I think you know, when faced with sort of the prospects of unemployment, I think that's certainly part of it. I mean,
that'll get your attention.
You know, yeah. People talk about rock bottom, and you know, he hasn't really specifically gone into sort of what it was that took him, you know, to sort of the depths where he was able to look at himself and make real changes. But you know, I think the Lakers were cautiously optimistic that those changes occurred. Obviously, they weren't sure. They gave him a non-guaranteed deal. But, you know, I mean, here we are more than halfway through the season, and, like, he's beloved. And that, you know what I mean? Him and Alex Caruso might be, like, the two most popular players outside of LeBron and AD at Laker games. He's a bench guy. He's an energy guy. He's the guy who does handshakes with everybody. He's up celebrating after every basket. He's been, you know, at least visibly such a good teammate. He's really rewritten his narrative and has probably bought himself an extra 5 or 6 years in the league because of it. It's been a pretty remarkable transformation.
That is awesome. That is so great. Dan, I do not play favorites. You know, they pay guys like you and me not to play favorites, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you who my two favorite Lakers are right now. Caruso and Howard, in that order. Then LeBron, then AD.
The Caruso thing is like,
awesome.
I mean, obviously, it's you've got this balding, thinly mustachioed white guy who's 25, who looks like he's like Schneider, you know, from, I don't even remember that show. I don't know. That's a half-baked
one day at a time.
One day at a time.
Right.
He looks a little bit like Schneider. And it's like, here he is, and he's just going to yam on you too. Right. Like, I mean, he's always looking for dunks. He's always looking for energy plays. You know, he's been a really, really nice bench piece, a good player too. And I think the Lakers did a good job kind of finding him through sort of their tank period, you know, 2 years ago, like getting him into their system, into their G League system, and having him as a two-way player, and then obviously rewarding him with a contract this year. And I, Tim, it just goes to show that, like, when you do have superstars like LeBron and AD, it can lead to really clear role definition for everybody else. There's such an obvious hierarchy. It's like Alex Caruso isn't trying to get, you know, LeBron shots or AD shots. Like, he knows his job. And this is a Lakers team that's full of players that know their jobs. And I think that's another thing that Frank Vogel deserves a lot of credit for, and Rob Pelinka, is that they've surrounded these guys with role players. You know, nobody is out there trying to earn an next contract. I mean, maybe that's part of the reason the Kuzma stuff hasn't been exactly like a perfect fit. But we've seen without AD, you know, he's very comfortable stepping in and taking shots and becoming a primary scorer on this team too. So the roster's really been pretty expertly put together.
Dan Wojcik, my guest. Not only is Caruso my favorite Laker, he might be the best basketball player I've ever seen, literally. And I'm not being – that's not hyperbole either. I love this guy. Dan, one last thought. And you and I could spend a lot of time on this, but if I just took kind of one shot at this, you did a piece in the LA Times on the Clippers recently, and if you were to go back to when LeBron James and Chris Bosh joined Dwayne Wade in Miami, the thinking was it would take a year for teams to kind of get on the same page, no matter how much talent they have. Given that track record, how well are the Clippers meshing so far in your mind?
I think it's gone okay. I don't think it's been great. I think the biggest thing that they've had to kind of come to terms with is the team that they were last year, right? The team that was sort of like this bulldog, hard-nosed team that was like an underdog every night and could play like the imagery that always comes to my mind is they play like a team that was like somebody was trying to drown, right? Like when you'll flail and kick and you'll do all this stuff just to make sure you can get your next breath. Like that's how they played last year. They don't have to do that this year. You know, most nights they're going to have the best player on the court. A lot of nights when they're fully healthy, they might have the best three or four. They're so talented and they're so deep. They have just been sort of, I think, a lax attitude because of it. They haven't recaptured the same urgency as they had a year ago. You know, will it come in the playoffs? I don't know. I mean, I would say Kawhi Leonard has earned enough trust to say, like, when the lights go on, like, that dude will flip the switch. He's ready in the playoffs. But, you know, can he bring everybody else with him? It remains to be seen. They've been okay, Jim. It feels like they've underachieved. But, like, you put their record up right against where the Raptors were last year, it's almost identical.
He is in Boston for the Lakers and Celtics this evening. He is the national NBA writer for the LA Times. My man, Dan Wojcicki. Dan, keep warm. Keep warm. Good to have
you
back.
Jim. I'm going to go find a parka.
Good man.
Somewhere.
Good job. All right, Dan. Thank you so much. Dan Wojcicki, excellent NBA writer for the LA Times.